Welcome to the Ohana Life Podcast. I created this podcast to provide important information that would empower you on this journey of life that we are all in together. I bring two people that I found extremely helpful to me or are an inspiration in some unique way. I try to combine my knowledge and questioning with the way they serve society in their distinct roles. It takes a team, a holistic family of support to feel whole in our lives. I wanted to give them a larger voice to explain what they do and why. I'm a very curious person and like to learn, observe, critically think, and engage. The best knowledge I receive are the ideas that I can use immediately, and I hope you find that with these episodes. I personally am a movement educator, and each student is my mirror. They teach me about how I use words and how their bodies react to certain scenarios in a playful, safe space. I like to make sure they feel grounded and ready for what life has to offer. Life can be hard, and we can never know what to expect day to day, and I like to prepare them for real life scenarios. Students show me where my level of compassion is at as I watch stories of their lives unfold with each and every movement. It is a play and a delicate dance of intuition as we work together, so they get the most out of each hour we are together. I want to extend that into these one-hour podcast episodes and have some ideas of other ways life can be beautiful and you can shine in all scenarios, living life with grace and tenderness. These episodes do take time to create, finding the right person, hoping they say yes, sorting, researching, and gathering the topics and questions I want to ask, getting it published, and then releasing it in hopes that you are inspired after a short hour's time. I hope that you share it with others and research what these leaders provide and can find hope in difficult situations, whether they be movement, daily interactions, past dilemmas, and future ones to come. In this episode, I was able to speak with the creator of the Flow Prezzo and CEO of Medela Health, Desiree Despong, who resides in New Zealand. She was so gracious explaining in depth the lymphatic system in all its facets so anyone can understand it. When we understand how this process works, we can use it as a tool for maintenance. She also explained how she created the device to help the lymphatic system and spends the rest of the interview talking about what it does, how it works, and how you can benefit, as well as answering some questions my student had about it. She is so lovely to have taken the time out of her massively busy schedule to answer these questions and help the community. We happen to have one of the Flowpresso devices at the Healing Center of Ohana, and people are able to schedule appointments at any time. Grab a cup of tea, sit back, and enjoy this episode.
Hi, Desiree.
Hi, Lisa. How are you doing?
Good. I am just so thrilled that you wanted to do a podcast with me because I have the device that you have created and so many people love it and they just don't know why. They seem to understand all of the reasons why. And so I thought bringing you on would really help kind of get into the weeds of what it is, what is the lymphatic system, what does the machine do, why you came up with it, all the things that you talk about all the time. But before that, I just wanted to say, I got to meet you in person.
You did. <laughs> In Texas.
And when was that? Was that April?
Yeah, there was April at the Changing Life Destiny Conference.
Yeah. So it was such an honor for me to be able to meet you for the first time and then be able to just ask you so many questions about the device. And because of you, I got to go to the conference because, you know, you had, I don't know how it happened, but because of you, we got invites. So it was really, really nice. And it was one of my first times at an expo like that. And yeah, I just really appreciated it. And then we got to do a black tie dinner together and I got to see it up so beautifully.
It's nice to get all dressed up. We don't do it very often, do we?
So I guess, and I'm going to put your bio out there, but did you want to give people a little bit of background on your kind of history of what you did? Do you do, or did you do hands-on lymphatic stuff before you developed this? Yeah. So could you just give us a little bit of a background on yourself?
What I call my past life was in IT and finance for the New Zealand Fire Service, actually. And so I was in a very corporate world, got into health, decided this was, something I really wanted to pursue. So I did a number of different trainings lasting on lymphatics. So I really found, I got quite passionate about that. And this is, we're talking 20 almost years ago. And, back then it was all about lymphedema, but my thing was I could see there was more value to moving lymph. So then I started studying in all different places, ended up in the United States and worked with a company for quite some time. They had some tech and I developed their training programs. So then I got to be also a trainer for the United States as well as New Zealand. And I ran a clinical practice for or up until about 3 years ago, just because of the working back in the corporate world, it's just too difficult to juggle both. So, which I do miss dearly, but predominantly my patients were in the cancer field, or they were walking through a chronic illness that required lymphatic drainage to support them both from a moving the drainage process through the body right through to having to try and boost their immunity. So that was me in a very quick nutshell. But yeah, lots of experience. I still do my bi-monthly speaking for the Lymphedema Association here in my local area. And then why I went on to develop technology was I was actually teaching in the States and the doctor who I'd become close with, he was saying, come on, you've got to create something. It's so hard to get lymphatic practitioners that are extremely well trained, and when they're really good, they're really hard to get into and they're hard to keep hold of, kind of thing, because they go and do their own practice often. So that's what led us down the journey of creating Flowprism. And it was kind of one of those moments. I was running a 12 practitioner practice with another colleague. He was actually American. He was an acupuncturist. And, we had everything from massage through to psychology. And we were both a bit burnt out ourselves. So we kind of made the decision to close the clinic down. And I thought, well, this was a great opportunity to become a mad scientist in a basement, and literally. And well, I started to look at all the tech around the world in the hope that I could find something that would work. But I wanted to challenge the situation where I added heat, which is kind of something we don't usually consider in the lymphedema world. But I was seeing a significant shift because I was using things like hot stones in amongst the lymphatic therapy because I was trying to mobilize the tissue fluids, and I was seeing profound results for that. So it took me a little while. I think it was close to 18 months when we actually launched officially, and that was in February 2020.
So hands-on, you used to manipulate the lymphatic system. And would
Yeah,
you start
so
at
I
the
would.
feet or would you start like kind of at the collarbone area?
So we always do proximal to distal when we're doing manual lymphatic drainage. And the reason being is, think of it like a toll booth. You've got the car at the front waiting to go through the toll booth, but then you've got all the cars behind. So you're not going to push from behind, right, to move the cars. You're going to start the first car and then the second and then third to get rid of the traffic jam. So the same thing applies when we do hands-on lymphatics. We always start proximal to distal, but the lymphatic system operates distal to proximal. It
Right,
goes
right.
against gravity. It's going literally uphill. And it doesn't have its own pump like the heart. So the circulatory system's got that pump to push the blood around, but the lymphatics doesn't. So why we do proximal to distal is we're trying to open up the pathways so that we can, or the clusters of lymph nodes and the environment around it, so we can create a momentum to move that fluid more successfully.
So I know you've talked about how the lymphatic system is not the circulatory system. They're two separate, right? So do you want to kind of just compartmentalize those for people? Because
Well,
that's
they are working together. They just are two separate systems. So your blood or your vascular system is part of what the heart's doing. It's pumping blood into the tissue, and what it's doing there is creating a nutrients, increased nutrients, oxygen, lots of good stuff to support the cells that your body has. And then the lymphatic system, and then there is a venous return. So there's a certain amount of it that goes back to the heart. But then the lymphatic system sits in amongst that. So they're what they're called blind-ended capillaries. So they're like a vessel that's opening up and pulling fluid in. So a little bit like, you know, if you think of a dam when you open the fluid and you let the fluid go, it's trying to actually suck that fluid in because the lymphatic system is designed to act as the drainage of the body. So it's trying to remove the byproduct, the toxins, the viruses, the cancer cells, etc. And it's pulling it in there because the best part about it going in there is you have cluster of lymph nodes. And those cluster of lymph nodes are like the powerhouse of immunity. They've got all these lymphocytes in there acting on your behalf to basically decide is something foreign. So do I destroy it? Is it something I just need to recycle? Or is it something that's fine and I can just keep it going through? And what that does is it then, once that fluid's been cleansed, it's coming back to the heart. The heart will push it to the liver to create another process of cleansing. And then we will either eliminate through urine, bowel, breath, or sweat.
The emunctories. So, okay, so many questions here because I really want people to understand the anatomy of the body to then understand why lymphatics. I mean, I'm obsessed with lymphatics, to be honest. okay, lymph fluid and lymph nodes are two different things, correct?
Correct. So coming back to that analogy, when your vascular system is pushing nutrients and oxygen into the tissue space, lymph only becomes lymph when it actually goes into those lymphatic capillaries. And that's when then it starts. Think of it like like the pipe system when you flush the toilet. Okay, so you flush the toilet, it goes into a pipe where it's actually going to be moved into a main trunk before it goes to the transfer station. The lymph node is like the transfer station, right? It's going to cleanse it, destroy it, whatever's required to then mobilize it back to the blood. So they are two separate entities.
Okay, but the capillaries and the nodes are different because the capillaries
Correct.
go into the nodes. Okay, and the nodes are where like the killer cells are that are all going to help you with an immune system. So what happens then when people have lymph nodes that are taken out of the body?
So that particular area where they're removed, they will obviously, the area isn't as what we would say optimal in its immune response, but you have over between 600 and 1,000 in your body. So for example, if you have an axillary clearance with breast cancer, that's a common procedure or a sentinel node biopsy. What it is that they've taken a cluster, but they haven't taken them all. So a lot of people will come into clinic and say, I've had all my lymph nodes removed. You haven't. It's just that they've taken a section out, especially if it's in the armpits of the axilla, that they'll take a section. Now, we have over 60 sitting in the quadrant of the breast chest area. So the body will pick up and utilize those other lymph nodes. It just means that you've got to be more aware of what you're doing. So, what are you putting on your skin? If you cut yourself, you want to be doing something straight away with making sure that you've dealt with any possible infection. It just means that environment isn't as aware or capable as what maybe you and I who haven't had the lymph nodes removed.
So people just have to work harder to make sure their lymphatic system is functioning optimally for them.
I think it's my thing is education is key and prevention is the best. So if you, it's no different to, for example, if I hurt my shoulder and I go to the PT, I'm trying to get my range of motion back. The same applies with the lymphatics. You want to get them mobilizing. So the things that will create a problem with mobilization is, yes, moving lymph nodes, but things like scar tissue, things like a damaged shoulder where you're not actually getting the movement to get lymph to move. Because the only way the lymphatic system moves is A, through skeletal or muscular movement. B, there's a muscle called a lymphangion, which kind of sits in the capillaries. It's on the outside of it. It's kind of, we've got these, what they call mitral valves, and they're like little dams that open and surge the fluid through to each section of that capillary. And they kind of squeeze. They're like, just think of muscle that they're squeezing the fluid through. Now, that happens when we sleep, well at night, or we go into parasympathetic. The third and most vital is how we breathe. So that a lot of people are shallow breathers. They're not doing that deep diaphragmatic. So diaphragmatic breathing, if done correctly, will increase your movement of fluid from the waist down by about 15% because it's pushing it up through the thoracic duct, which is a tube system that meets with the heart on the left subclavian. So the thing for me is we've got to mobilize the area that has been compromised to make sure that we're actually able to optimize the lymph nodes that are left there.
That are left. Yeah. Okay. So where would you say the most lymph nodes are
They're
clustered?
actually in the, well, some anatomy books say your cervical nodes, we call them cervical in New Zealand, we just have to do it differently, or in the abdomen. So we have clusters neck, we have them in the armpit, we have them down the side of the chest, down the center of the chest. We've got them in our iliac, which is just above the hip line, below the hip line, inguinal. We've got popliteal at the back of the knees. And then we have all this cluster of lymph nodes sitting in the gut, but also around the organs. So there's quite a few in different areas, and the gut plays a really big part with fats and proteins. So basically, there's this little villi in there in the small intestine. We've also got T cells and B cells in there. They're called Peyer's patches. So the body's trying to also move fats and proteins. So if your lymphatic system's compromised, this is when we're talking about what are you eating? Because I'm not talking about meat protein, I'm talking about especially your long chain fatty acids, your saturated fats, all those things add another level of stress to you from the lymphatic point of view.
So the Peyer's patches you said is only in the abdominal nodes.
In the small intestine, yeah. So they are like a they're like a little think of it like a lymph node, but they've got B cells and T cells. So T cells are like your general out of an army that's telling everyone what to do. Your B cells are the ones that create the antibodies. So they're sitting in there. They say that there's up to about 25 in an adult sitting in the actual gut, but there's also on the outside, the mesentery, there's actually lots of lymph nodes sitting out there as well. And sometimes you can feel them if you've got gut issues, you can rub your stomach and it's like you feel these like little pearls, and that's telling you no different to when your glands go up, that's your lymph nodes here as well. You can actually feel them.
So, I mean, breathing is so important if there's more there, because when people inhale, the diaphragm is supposed to descend and it almost acts like a sub pump for the organs, which I'm assuming would help that pump like action for these lymph nodes that are in the abdominal region, as long as they let the pelvic floor kind of move with the diaphragm to accept that pressure. Interesting. So the flap of the lymph nodes, are they the same throughout? So you're saying they suck in the fluid?
So your capillaries are blind ended. So that means that they've kind of just like they're a, like they've got an end to it, which has little collagen fibers that opens it up and pulls fluid in. Once we go into what they call that, into that initial blinded, we go into what they call a pre-collector. And a pre-collector has these mitral valves. So they're opening and surging and it's going into sections. So the idea is to create a surge where you pull the fluid into the next section, into the next section, as you move into the main trunk and then you go into a lymph node. So that's how it's operating. And it is like it's throughout the whole body. You've got more surface lymphatics than you do blood vessels. You have more lymph fluid than you do blood. So that's why, because there's so much, and most of it, about 75% of it, just sits in under the skin.
So that's why dry brushing is very helpful.
Correct.
Moving is very helpful. So what happens if someone damages? Is it possible to damage the flap and will it come back? Can the
So you
flap
mean
come
in
back?
the mitral valve?
Just on any of the nodes. Don't all the nodes have flaps or no?
So you have what they call efferent and afferent. So they're think of it like a how to I give you an analogy. Think of it as a station that's got like a train station that's got different trains coming in and leaving. That's what it looks like with the lymph node. Okay, so then that way you've got fluid coming in, it goes through the cleansing process and elimination, whatever the immune system's doing from a response, and then it leaves the train station. So it's heading to the heart, as we talked about earlier. So when there's a dissection or there's even trauma, like it can be an injury, it can be a car accident, what will happen is that lymph node will either be A, removed or B, destroyed. And so there is no current solid research to say that lymph nodes will come back, that they will repair,
Okay.
that they'll be able to regrow. The only positive I've seen is I was at a conference, and this is a few years back in Melbourne in Australia, and there was a plastic surgeon who was trying to work out if he could make breast tissue out of your own blood cells so that he could actually develop your own implant. And when he went to show us it after it was created, they'd actually used a mouse to do this. There was actually a lymph node inside. Now, our surface lymphatics regrow. That's known. You all, so for example, if you have to go through something like radiation, as part of a cancer process, it does destroy your vessels, but they do regrow. So I'm not 100% convinced that we don't regrow lymph nodes. It's just that it's very, very hard to measure because we don't, like, unlike and you can't really see them on an MRI unless they're really involved and you know they have got cancer in them or something. But because to be able to, no one can actually physically count them. It's impossible. So even if you had really good measures, like we can do what they call lymph scintigraphy, which is putting protein dye in and then you track it through scanning. But even then you can't actually physically go 1, 2, 3, 4. Like it's too hard. So that's why we'll never really know unless someone decides to take that up as a major research project. So, but I'm not too sure again how they would measure that at this point.
So the nodes on under the skin do not have flaps.
No. So they have the vessels that the capillaries that are draining the fluid from the tissue have those mitral valves that are opening and closing. And then we head into the actual lymph node where it's the fluids going through different processes. It's called sinuses. And then it leaves, like I said, think of it as a train station that's coming in, it's dropping off stuff, picking up stuff, and off it goes again. Very similar approach.
Okay, so I guess where I'm going with it is, say someone has a really deep tissue massage, they could they damage the surface lymph nodes?
Yes, well, yes, if you're compromised. If you're managing some sort of illness or you've had an injury, I would absolutely discourage having deep tissue therapy. Now, most people can handle it. The surface lymphatics will bounce back, is probably the best way to explain it. But if you have some sort of compromised tissue, then that's going to take a lot longer, and there is a great fear that we could actually damage. And that's why manual lymphatic drainage is a gentle approach. It's not a deep pressure.
And I'm
So for
assuming it's
some,
probably strokes. Is it more
it
strokes?
is very directional, very gentle, but like a butterfly on the skin. That's why people go, oh, that doesn't feel like anything's happening. And then they get to the end of the session, they're like, oh my Lord, what happened? You know? So it is very, very powerful, yet very, very subtle.
Okay. And then when lymph nodes are, and we'll get off the lymph node topic after this, when lymph nodes are inflamed, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It just means that something's happening at those
It's
nodes.
their job. That's what they're supposed to do. Like you want ideally to trap in the lymph node an infection or a virus or something because that's where that real bulk of support's going to be. Now, I know with cancer, we talk about, you know, they remove them because the cancer's there. But, you know, the thing for me is maybe they were the soldiers. They were the ones that stopped it moving. So, you know, we've got to be grateful for that. They're like the first port of call. So, you know, for me, I'm like, good, the job, you know, the body was doing a great job. It was trying to actually stop it from spreading. And so, I think they play a massive role and we underestimate them. But being, if you're, they're swollen and you're up, that's a good indicator something's not right. And I see it a lot in women with pelvic issues. Like, unfortunately, like here in New Zealand, our screening isn't always that great. And, I've seen lymph nodes up and I've had to go, keep going, keep persisting, keep finding out. And then they find out they have an
Would you say
early.
lymph nodes up?
The lymph nodes are swollen.
Okay, sorry.
And especially in that pelvic area, because, and then, you get them or in the abdomen. I mean, then you go and get some testing and you finally find, you learn you've got an early stage cancer or something. So, if lymph nodes are staying up and you're not able to get them to, go back to normal, they can calcify and that can be easily managed and sorted and discussed with your physician or your medical team. But, the thing for me is if a lymph node's staying up, that's an indicator something in that area isn't working. So, for example, if you have an abscess in your tooth and this lymph node's constantly staying up in my neck, then I know that, and I haven't been able to, or I didn't even know I had a abscess, or I didn't know I had an infection under my tooth, then that's an indicator something's not right. And they usually are pretty onto it, those lymph nodes. They're telling you something's diseased. I mean, I remember I had my amalgams out. I went and did that, and I had a cone scan. I had the normal X-rays, and nothing showed here. But I always had a lymph node that was up here. And when we went to actually do the extraction, there was this infection under my tooth that had probably been there for years. And no one could detect it through X-ray or even the cone scan. So for me, that's when I was going, and I knew, and I was working it, and I was trying to, but this thing, and once we got rid of that and cleansed it out, and we did, I can't remember what he put in, he did stuff with it anyway, but I've never had a lymph node up again.
Okay, so yeah, the lymph nodes at the groin, I forgot about that. When I was younger, those would inflame quite a bit. I forgot about that. So when you say a cluster, there's larger clusters. There's not nodes that are bigger than others. Well, are there nodes that are bigger than others in certain areas, or is it just that the clusters are bigger in certain areas?
The clusters are bigger in
Yeah,
certain
okay.
areas. I mean, you do get they can range slightly in size, but they normally are enlarged because of an infection.
Okay. So one of the ways to help move the lymphatic system and for the circulatory system is movement. Can someone move too much? Like, say someone's on their
Where
feet all day long, or they're walking a ton, or they're running marathons, and their legs start swelling, but they're moving. So what do you think needs to happen there?
Usually, well, there's two factors. One, that there's an accumulation of fluid not moving. So, in other words, it could be the groin, it could be in the inguinal, which is in the top of the legs there. And the fluid is not, so it's basically built up so much that it's almost like it's become no different to the stream. You put rocks and, trees and stuff in it, and then next minute you've got a very swollen stream, and the same thing can occur in the body. The other thing could be is some people exercise to cope with life because it gives them that endorphin rush. What I see is that there is a dysregulation in the autonomic nervous system, which means that they're using exercise as their pickup. But what it is their body adrenally is so exhausted that it is actually causing a dysregulation. And when that happens, we're not going into that parasympathetic, so the recovery and the repair, which means our lymphatic system doesn't drain as effectively at night. So it can be either. And then you've got to look at people as an individual and say, well, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And then start to assess from that, from a point of view, because it is more common than people realize, especially this dysregulation in the autonomic nervous system. I think it's pandemic in the world right now. I think we created new normals, and that new normal was to survive a pretty tough 5 years that we've had, from everything from pandemics through to, political changes through to, now, financial downturns. I mean, it's been a tough 5 years for everyone, and people are sitting there going, what's going to happen next? And when you're living in that world, you're always in that fight flight. You're like waiting. And I think we've forgotten to recognize what rest and repair is. It's like we've lost our way. And then by getting back into whether it's the breath, the yoga, the meditation, the ability to reset so that your body goes, actually, I don't need to be on edge anymore. And I'm seeing increase in lymphatic issues mainly because of that. And
Increased lymphatic issues that it gets blocked up, clogged up.
yeah, they're not draining. They're not draining at night. Same with you have a glymphatics in your brain. That's a like the little mini lymph system of your brain, and it's responsible for draining it. And if you don't get 7 to 8 hours sleep a night, it's not draining the brain efficiently. And therefore, there is this build up, whether it's amyloid plaques or toxicity, we're not getting. And that's why so many more people deal with brain fog. That's why we're seeing a massive increase in neurological issues, because we're not going into that deep sleep. And we're not regulating autonomically. So then the benefit of that is it increases the parasympathetic behavior, which part of that is when you're rest and repair, you do actually have drainage. That's why if you go to bed at night swollen, you often wake up and you're not. And that's because the lymphatic system is actually working now. So it will work with movement, but it will work really well too if you're getting good quality sleep.
So I think that we cycle through 90 minutes of sleep, where we kind of move every 9 minutes, we flip over. Is that for the lymphatic system?
I would say it plays a big part of it. I mean, the research, there's some argument between is it left side or right side that you sleep on that's better for lymphatic drainage. But definitely it does seem to be in a side position. So the movement, obviously, I mean, if you think about it for our body, we don't want to lie in one place for 8 hours. We want to move. It would make common sense. So the lymphatics will definitely get support from that, especially if you're in a side position. It does make it better outcome from a lymphatic point of view.
And do you know if there's a percentage of deep sleep that has to happen in order for the glymphatic system? Like, is it a percentage or time, amount of time that?
The hardest thing with lymphatics is they're still only studying mice. So they're still not 100%. There is a tech company that's just recently come out. They're doing patents and everything. They think they've worked out how to measure it. And it's through a series of different processes, including heart rate variability. So, for me, that they're still learning. Like, it's pretty hard to go, okay, this is a mouse, and we're researching a mouse, and then go, is this the same for a human? But I do know that the REM is really, really important from a point of view, not only from lymphatics, but also for the brain. So, it's, I think people are recognizing sleep. It's a 41 billion, is it $4.1 billion issue in the United States at the moment? So,
Like, again, not sleep or not sleeping well.
it's costing the medical
Oh.
world in the US 4.1 billion because of the fact that there is the sleep is so bad that people are leaning into, whether it's sleep apnea stuff, whether it's medication, all those sorts of things. And then we go to the other extreme where everyone's monitoring their sleep. So then they get stressed because their app didn't tell them they slept well. And then I'm like going, see, that brings another level of stress because you're going to bed stressed going, oh, I better make my app work tonight, And it's like, so then you still don't sleep well. So it's kind of a double-ended sword at the moment about how well we mo I think it's a great thing to monitor your sleep, to recognize it. But then sometimes I also think it pays to put the tech aside. Because the reality is that whether you've had a good sleep or not. You wake up
You feel it
going,
when you
wow.
wake up.
And
Absolutely.
that's what's important, because then that's what you're feeding back to the body all the time. Great, you did a good sleep. Let's do this again, And then you get less into the lying at 2 o'clock in the morning going, I'm not sleeping, I'm not sleeping, I'm not sleeping, and then, break the pattern. But coming back to your REM, I'm not a fae exactly on from a brain perspective, but as I said, coming back to lymphatics, they're still learning. Like this was only found out in 2014, was it? I think, and 2012 that we even have this system, but we still haven't been able to find a way to measure the human brain. So I always go, well, we're still learning. How can we really know? But they just know that 7 to 8 hours of sleep would then factor in a very fair amount of REM and, light sleep, etc., so that you're actually able to get that good quality drainage. And I think that's what's the most important thing for me at the moment in learning.
Yeah, I'm not a good, I sleep amazing, but I sleep very short periods because of my lifestyle. But I usually can get at least 2 hours of REM and 2 hours of deep sleep. I have a friend, she has the Whoop, and it will tell you if you have green, yellow, or red. Do you have it? Do you know it?
I know it, but I don't have it.
Red is bad. Red means that you haven't
Yeah.
recovered your body. So anyway, her husband had asked her to do something and she was like, "No, sorry, I'm in the red."
Oh, I love it. Well, that's a
It
good use of it.
was so
Haven't thought of
anyway,
using it for that.
I know. So let's get into the device that you created. And is it called the Flowprezo? Like the SS in New Zealand is a Z sound.
Yeah, well, it's just our accent, I think, more, but
Oh, okay.
Flowprezo, yeah.
So Flowprezo. So I have one thanks to Freddie. Freddie kind of got me into a lot of these things that I have. And it's just been the one of the best things that I ever got. I'm gonna have you talk about it, but I just want to say, like, our experience with it, not only do people feel good when they're on it, and they always want to stay on longer. And maybe, I'll have you talk to like the length of time being on there and why. But my son at the time was 17. He was doing a rowing race and he and his boatmate were just extremely tired. It's a lot of rowing. I mean, they'll do like thousands of meters on the water and it can be a lot. So we had put them on it the third year, not knowing like what they needed. And I think some schools of thought for sports is like, go, 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 go. But then I'm always like, yeah, but where's the rest? So anyway, when they were on it, they fell asleep so deeply that I realized, oh my God, this is the missing link. They're getting all that work, but they're not down regulating. And they ended up winning that year, like first in the nation for that category. And I thought, okay, this is the missing link, is like this parasympathetic response, this down regulation, this finally figuring out how to get into the deepest aspects of the body. And this is for lymph, but it does all these other things. So do you want to kind of talk about the Flowpresso?
Sure. So those that haven't had it, it looks a bit like a spacesuit. You get in, you have some booties that we put on your feet, and then we have leg pieces. We have a trunk, so an abdominal area kind of back. Then we have the arm pieces, and then we have a back piece. And it's delivering, except the back piece, heat, but compression to all those pieces. So think about you being wrapped up like a Christmas present. But what we're delivering is this beautiful pneumatic compression. Now, pneumatic means that it's an overlapping compression. So, as one of the compression chambers comes in, as it releases off, the other one is overlapping. And that's really, really important for lymphatics because it's creating a momentum and it means that the fluid isn't being left anywhere. So, as Freddie would say, it's like a tube of toothpaste. We're squeezing you from the bottom to the top. So we're working with the way the lymphatic system functions, so distal to proximal, and what we're doing is trying to create momentum of movement of fluid. Now, in our studies, what we found was because we were delivering the heat, it was like being wrapped up and held and hugged. And a little bit like deep pressure therapy is a good one. So weighted blankets and stuff, that same sort of feeling of being held. Now, when you do that, it's what we call a somatic experience. And if anyone's read The Body That Keeps the Score book, that's all about, mental health and being able to, from a psychiatrist's point of view, of how they would work with in psych wards. And they found one of the most effective and contributing factors to help someone recover from anything that was PTSD trauma was if they brought in a somatic aspect. So that is giving you that sense of touch. So, massage is a good example. You get a massage and you go, oh, I didn't realize it was sore there. The difference with this is that you're fully clothed. You're inside this compression device that's just, it's like a wave. It starts at your feet, it works up the legs, it gets to the abdomen, it's up to the chest, it lifts your shoulders, and then you sort of drift back down again. And then that's it over and over again. And so the body starts to feel like it's flowing. So it feels like it's being held, it's flowing. And then more importantly, as we've tried to achieve with this, is get the lymphatic system moving. When we were doing early stage research, we actually ended up in front of New Zealand police, and we had everything, what we'd call your SWAT, right through to frontline. And we did one session a week in their 40 minutes, and we did that for 3 weeks, and we had a 92% improvement in sleep. We had a 53% 53% improvement in anxiety and 62% in stress. Now, this was in five different locations with five different practitioners, so that there was, what we call lots of variables. So in other words, it wasn't like I was the one person treating them all the time and therefore it was because of me being nice to them. It was actually because they were in the suit and able to check out of their stressful lives, have 40 minutes, and when we add to this experience, we put a, if you don't deal with anything, like any anxiety or anything, we cover your eyes with a silk mask. We put beautiful headphones on with some lovely background music, because what we're trying to do is eliminate any outside stimulus. So, hearing the door shut or someone talking, because you automatically react, right? You respond. We want to bring you back into feeling what your body is doing. And more importantly, subconsciously, you're sensing it as well, because your body then goes, hang on a minute, I'm out of sync. I am dysregulated. This isn't normal for me to be living in this world. And so then we see people do this deep reset. So it's a bit like, you're probably too young for this, but control alt delete of the computer. You used to do that, right? To reset. It's a very similar response. So when someone comes out of this suit, there's a sense of lightness. The amount of times I've had people say, I haven't felt this calm in a very long time. And then, of course, as the lymphatics start to move, they're rushing to the bathroom because they need to urinate, because guess what? We moved fluid. So that's when it was created, it was developed for lymphatics. But I have been working in that cancer industry for so long that I could see that the autonomic nervous system was dysregulated. And when you put someone into being held and safe and warm and create this beautiful movement of flow, then the body just let go. And that's where I think the magic is of FlowPreso. It's a combination of experiences. It's not just, I'm going to squeeze your lymph and move it. There's all this other stuff that's going on to support you really going back to being centered in you. And it's that kind of, you got this again. Like, it's that as well. There's an element of you come out going, wow, like I'm just in such a different place.
That is something I definitely hear all the time is the wave. People ride the wave, and like that's what keeps them going through the whole thing. And life is a wave, so I like that they are stopping long enough to kind of feel that wave of the natural body system, so that they can kind of take that out into the world and try to not fight the natural wave of what's going on in the world and their life. When you studied the first responders, was it once a week? They did it once a week, right?
Correct. Once a week, for 3 sessions total. We did see a difference with firefighters. I mean, bearing in mind that a police officer here in New Zealand, they are on, like, they're working that shift. Firefighters go to bed and sleep until the call comes if they're on a night shift. So they're reacting at quite a strong level, like jumping out of bed, going, getting ready in the truck and taking off. So we found that they needed more like 6 sessions. There was a difference. And what we were measuring was heart rate variability as well. So we were seeing them going from basically being more stressed lying down to then regulating where we could get them to a point where when they lay down, they went into parasympathetic, which is where you want to be. And when they stood up, they went back into sympathetic. So, it was very obvious, but I've studied now tons of different people and different illnesses and everything. And the same thing, you see the same issue going on, that we're living in a sympathetic state even when we're lying down. And it can be as simple as you worry too much. Your mind is taking over the control of the body, and you're worrying about tomorrow, you're worrying about next week. And guess what? Our body doesn't understand that that isn't actually an action that needs to be prepared for. It doesn't realize that it's just a thought process. It thinks that I've got to get all my adrenal ready, my cortisol ready. I've got to be ready for the next fight or next conversation with the boss or the next argument with my husband. Like it's that, and your body starts to put yourself into that reaction rather than just, going, okay, I've got this thing to deal with tomorrow. I'll worry about it tomorrow. Because the reality is, we're not differentiating, well, our body isn't differentiating between what is real, as in, hang on, there's an alligator coming at me, I better run, to, I've got an issue to deal with at work tomorrow, and I'm really stressed out by it because I don't know how to, and I run, play, put the process through my brain 20 times on how I'm going to manage it. And I'm in just as much reactive state as I would be if I was running from something that was chasing me.
So you have set it up where it's pieces that fit on the body beautifully. So no matter what body shape, they kind of fit and form pretty well. And then there's hoses that kind of fill the air in. And then there's conductors for the heat. So it's like this beautifully designed whole mechanism for the human body. And then because the auxiliary nodes are not included, so that's under the armpits, you created these orb balls, flow orb that goes under to help increase or touch upon the rest of the lymphatic system. Do you want to explain that a little bit?
Certainly. So, yeah, the two big issues we had was obviously our cervical nodes, the neck, because obviously you wouldn't want me to put compression around your throat. So that was why we created Flow Vibrate. And that was to, it's just using vibration, and it's helping actually encourage the drainage of those lymph nodes so that A, you can get some lymphatic drainage. B, we can drain the sinuses, but also if you want it, we can get rid of the puff in the face. And then the other area was the axilla. And so these orbs were developed. So there's three different modes in that. There's a vibration, an oscillation, and a pulse. And so we just put them under the armpits while you're in the session. But where they can also be great is someone can take them home. They can use them themselves for under their armpits. Or they're also designed to release the fascia or to use from a sports recovery or even. We're learning that plantar fasciitis, arthritis in the hand, it's using because it's creating that vibration. So the movement of the tissue. So where we're pumping with compression and the flow preso, this was creating a vibration. So a microcirculation to try and encourage blood and lymph flow.
Okay. And then the machine has two modes. So you have mode one and mode two. Mode one is just, the most commonly used for people. Mode two is like a sports mode. Do you want to explain the two different modes and why you created them? Does the new
Sure.
machine have both modes too?
Yes.
Yeah,
So
okay.
mode one, that's, we call it relaxation, but really that's the lymphatics. That's the sequential that we were talking about for before. So it sort of comes in, squeezes the foot as it's about to release around B1 comes in around the ankle, and it just moves its way up the body and then gives you a little tiny squeeze and then releases. Mode two is about trying to support shift in the connective tissue or your fascia. So the idea is to create a resistance or an isometric. So what we do is we squeeze the foot, hold. We squeeze the ankle, hold. Calf, hold all the way up the body. So you feel a little bit like a pimple being squeezed, but the pressure is so gentle that it's not designed to be painful. It's just to create this restriction against or resistance against your body. And then all of a sudden, it all deflates all at once. So it's sort of like this big rush. So you get this lymphatic, you get this vascular flush, you're getting all this movement in the body. But more importantly, you're getting the glide back into that connective tissue. So we're starting to take away what I call the rigidity or the lack of movement, like I mean, they talk about 80% of back pain is fascia related. So it's actually trying to get the mobility back. Now, we only use it, like sports people absolutely love it. But we tend to always make sure that they get to all three of mode one. We need to know the lymphatics is opening. We need to know those drainage pathways are available so that if we do push fluid, we are able to ensure that that person can mobilize that fluid away without a Herx response or a detox. And so we're very specific about who we use it on and how we use it.
Yeah, I've rarely used it on people just because I'm not sure that they need it right now. So it's like an isometric hold, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Which I try to have people do, against the floor, different things, because it just helps you create the tension for them. Intentional tension creates intentional release. That's what I always say.
That's a perfect saying.
Can you just explain to people the difference between drainage and detoxification?
Sure. So I think we all know detox. Everyone's obviously had some involvement in that. And obviously with the detoxification, you're trying to actually remove the waste from the body. But the problem with that is that if your drainage pathways aren't working efficiently, there's nowhere for it to go. So it becomes like a recirculation, like a soup, So you're saying that that's why so many people, if they're having detoxes and they're having lots of symptoms, like a Herx response, headaches, not doing well, usually it's because their drainage pathways aren't open. So obviously your elimination bowel, urine are the big part of it, then the liver, but then it's the lymphatics at that point. So the lymphatics is the drainage pathway of helping as we come back. We talked about the capillary that's pulling that fluid in, and then it's trying to mobilize it out of the body. So all the byproduct is heading in there. So it is a waste system. It's part of that process. And that's why, for me, those things are absolutely vital. Those particular, like bowel, kidney, liver, and lymph, have to be considered as part of any program someone's doing to ensure that they are actually mobilizing and removing, whether it's metals, toxins, whatever's going on in the body, to actually get a effective outcome from a health recovery point of view.
Absolutely. I always give people water, really good water after. And I'm like, please drink this in the next hour plus some. Yeah. How much water do you suggest after a treatment?
We usually say two glasses after the first session, and then an hour every hour after that, like three or four glasses. Because I'll use the gross analogy. It's like the toilet. You go to the toilet, you flush the toilet. So when we're trying to mobilize drainage in your body, we want to flush it through. So A, you don't get the headaches. B, you get the mobilization of that fluid that you want to move out of the body. And that's where water, good quality water, is absolutely vital when you're doing anything like even massage, but lymph drainage is even more so.
Okay, great. Well, people had some questions. So I just wanted to ask you them real quick and then we can end it for you because I know it's late there, right? It's pretty.
No, it's almost 9 a.m. on Friday, so I'm in your future.
Oh, you're in the future. Oh, how
Yeah.
lucky. That's why you look so fresh.
Yeah, first thing.
Oh my God, I'm talking to someone in the future. This is so exciting. Okay. And you kind of answered some of these, but if you want to kind of top them off, feel free. Someone said, how can this help a cancer healing journey? Specifically breast cancer.
So basically, I come back to that autonomic dysregulation. And if I can allow you to sleep better, if I can allow your body not to feel stressed, if I can allow your body to move those fluids and encourage better circulation, so blood flow, oxygen, cancer hates oxygen and hates good nutrients, then that's how it will help from any illness, but also predominantly cancer. My sister had stage 4 bowel that perforated that went to liver. The diagnosis wasn't great. Well, she's here 6 years later, still with no cancer now. So, and she does lymph every week. It's a big part of her protocol. because I absolutely believe, hand on heart, that it makes a big difference to support someone in any health journey.
Well, and you're looking at it medically, and I remember you telling me this story about your sister, but you're also there's a big spiritual, holistic component to it as well, that I think is really beautiful that helped her with her journey as well.
Well, yes, but lymphatics, if you're into the Louise Hay or the Annette Noontill and all those women that do amazing, and that have educated amazingly around the emotional attachment to anything that's, you're dealing with physically. But lymphatics is all about letting go. What are you holding on to? And so we know now scientifically that emotion is held in the cell. And then it's also held in the fascia. And guess what? The lymph and the fascia work together. Like they are very entwined, literally. So my thing is when we start moving lymph, yes, from a clinical point of view, we are draining away the byproduct, but we're also allowing the body to let go of emotion as well, or cellular memory. And it can occur where they just will come out of it crying. And our thing is you don't need to analyze it. It's just like getting rid of the junk. You're just
It's a
letting it
relief,
go.
yeah.
And so it can be incredibly powerful on a healing journey.
So the question was, what happens when lymph nodes are removed, rerouting the brain? You kind of already answered that. What happens when they're removed? They sort of
Yeah, so
work
the
in
body
that.
will re what we call reroute. So it will actually utilize the location nearby of other lymph nodes and educate them what those are for yourself. If you've had some taken from the armpit, say, learn where the other ones are. Like there's some at the back called the subscapula. Then you can actually then pump those or do some therapy around that so that you're actually ensuring that what you've got is really supported by you, just as you would with anything else that you're dealing with from a health or an injury perspective. You get in there and you're doing something to support, and that's what I would recommend.
Okay. What is the difference between lymphedema, lipedema, and edema?
So I had an argument once with a lymphologist about lymphedema and edema. Because I think they're both the same. It's
Okay.
swelling, the lymphatic system isn't managing it, and therefore it is a form, let's say, of lymphedema because the lymphatic system is compromised. From a point of view of lymphedema to lipedema, lymphedema is due to a disrupted lymphatic system. It can actually be what they call a primary one, which is when you're born with it. Or a secondary, which is from having lymph nodes removed or trauma. Lipedema is more to do with the fat, the adipose tissue of the body. So it's actually more to do with that, and it's just that there's an accumulation of fluid that comes from that occurring. So where we find lymphatic drainage isn't as impactful on lipedema as what it is lymphedema, but it gives them an awful lot of relief from the pressure
Lipedema
that
more
goes in.
has like clogged up fascia. Is that
Exactly, yes. And yes,
okay?
very much.
Why can it only be used every 7 days? Because people want to do more than seven, I mean, less than 7 days. Why is it recommended every seven?
To be honest, that's what most of our research was on. You can do a session twice a week, but you want at least have a 3-day stand down. And the reason I say that is because you don't want to go through a massive detox. It can be too much for the body. You want the body to have some time to mobilize those fluids, get itself ready again for the next round. And because you're putting pressure on those organs to process all that, so you want to be able to do it in a way that's effective and supportive, and you're not ending up in bed feeling terrible for a week.
We don't want that. We do not want that. That was basically it for questions because you've answered the others. This has been so nice.
Thank you for
I
having
really
me.
appreciate your time. And I'm trying to get a second Flowpresso because why not?
No,
My
that's
family
amazing.
does miss, I have a clinic now and they do miss the Flowpresso in the house.
Oh.
But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, thank you for supporting us and doing everything you do. We do appreciate it.
You're so lovely. Your husband is so great as well. I just appreciate everything that you've designed to support the lymphatic system. I do my best to have people move the lymphatics in certain ways to help. But this is such a great addition to that. So I re appreciate you answering all these questions in such depth so that people understand it better.
My pleasure. Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I do hope that you found this podcast helpful and that there's something that you can take away from it that will really improve your life, physically, mentally, and emotionally. I do these free of cost for you all and hope that it's a good resource for you. If you are looking for anything Ohana related, feel free to check out our website, ohanayoganh.com. Thank you and have a beautiful day.